Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 12. What is this, the Bangle Dangles, Juliet Huddy?
Such a good song. Oh, remember when this came out? You probably don't. It's been so long.
No,
this
never,
was when Less
never
Than
liked
Zero.
The Bangles.
Well, this was part of the Less Than Zero soundtrack. Remember that one? With all the Brat Packers.
No.
Robert Downey Jr.
No. Dope Fiend, no. Didn't
God,
follow
me.
They didn't follow him. Sorry.
Well,
sorry.
I didn't follow him, but that was a great movie. Well, but anyway, that's
did you follow him into that house one time
no.
when he was smoking meth and he did a home invasion and wondered, where am I?
The house next door to his house.
He's a guy who ends up winning an Oscar,
he
right?
He got his act together. I mean, he seems to have really improved his life. And, you know, many of us go through troubling times. Many of us go through, abuse and things like that, and we come out of it, and
well,
here we are today.
Robert Downey Jr. is not the target of an L.A. task force that has been put together
not
by
yet.
The district attorney in L.A. County to go
not
after
yet.
What she says is about 36 claims against noted men in Hollyweird who either perved on men, women, or children.
Well, just remember.
36.
Well,
and the numbers are growing.
Well, the numbers are growing because people are starting to, women and men are starting to realize that you get out there and you say something, you, at this point, where we are at this point in the game, you may have an effect. Now, that's the problem is these allegations better be true.
Well, the point is that we have heard your mayor. Not mine. I didn't
He's not
vote
mine.
For him
I didn't
twice.
Vote for him either, nor would I.
Bill de Blasio. What has been his famous line? See something, say something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what the women did with Louis C.K. when he tried to prove to them that he did not have erectile dysfunction. They saw something, and they've said something. And you know who I'm blaming this all on?
Who?
Whether it's Judge Roy Moore, C.K., whether it's Anthony Weiner, whether it's Harvey Weinstein.
You,
Juliet Huddy. Because you have led this tsunami. When you filed against Bill O'Reilly at the Fox News Channel, you, one of many women there, you are the women who have actually led to a whole host of women now all over the country.
I cannot comment.
Dime on
I cannot
perps.
Comment on such things, on such matters as my employment or departure from Fox.
But I can. I certainly can.
You
I mean, let's
can.
Face it. You were one of many there, and I applaud you for that. Because
well,
what we have to do is we
I can't
get,
say anything. But
we got to get rid of the pervs. And as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast.
Get rid of the pervs. Come on, everybody.
Yeah.
Get rid of the pervs.
Except what happens if they make an allegation and it isn't the right perv, like in the case where Charlie Sheen was accused of having perved on a young boy, and now all of a sudden they're saying,
Corey
but it
Feldman
wasn't right.
It saying wasn't, that it was Corey Haim, but Corey
right.
Haim's mother has come out and said, no, it was somebody else.
With Dr. Oz, although she mentioned the name and they bleeped it.
Which is, I mean, we need a lip reader.
Well, no, I have a feeling they're holding it for today's show.
Probably.
So that they'll reveal who that perv is. But anyway, it is Chilly Willy here.
It is.
And no matter how warm I am, because I am really hot to trot with the debut of the Guardian Angel documentary about my life called Vigilante, which actually will get its first screening in New York at the Doc Film Festival. This is the largest documentary film festival in the world.
I can't. This is going to be amazing, honestly. First of all, documentaries, if you're not a documentary person, you really need to become one because they are some of the most amazing forms of entertainment.
Yeah, and there are a lot of them, and we're competing for awards.
I love this.
So that eventually we might be considered for an Oscar or for a Golden Globe or any of the other number of awards.
Have you heard anything? I mean, I know that you just had the debut out in Colorado,
yeah.
At a festival there. But now we've had a few days. Are you hearing little percolations, you know, around?
Oh,
what are people
yeah.
saying? Give me a line.
People are fired up about it because they're saying it's such a great period piece about what the 70s, 80s, and 90s were.
And everybody loves that.
And it isn't so much because I'm the voice. I'm the one that you actually hear, like a nonstop yenta for like 80
shocking.
Minutes.
Not so.
It's the great file footage, the films and the photographs that the director, David Wexler, who produced and wrote the piece, and his editor, Brad Coleman, put together.
No, and he obviously had to do a lot of investigating, and that can be very difficult when you're trying to get the footage from, you know, television stations that really aren't the television stations anymore.
Actually,
how did he do that?
I assisted in some aspects, not all. But I had a treasure trove of old tapes.
Oh, good.
That they don't even have machines to run them on anymore.
Like VHS tapes?
Yeah, even before that.
I mean,
all types, even from faraway places. And both David Wexler and his editor, Brad Coleman, were able to transfer that so that you can see the period footage of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And it goes from the time that I started the Guardian Angels to the time that we cracked down on the crack cocaine menace in Times Square and gave that a badly needed Kalani to my battles with the Gottis and Gambinos. So if anyone is interested in seeing the world premiere here in New York City, it's Sunday night and Wednesday afternoon. I will be at both. I will be doing the intro, and I'll be doing the Q&A afterwards, along with David Wexler, the director, producer, and writer, and his editor, Brad Coleman. Also, my girlfriend, Nancy Regula, will be there since I talked so much about her. And you'll have a chance to really delve into it. In order to find out where to go for these showings, you go to WABCradio.com, our website. You look at the tab. You can actually see a trailer of it. And then if you'd like to come, you purchase a ticket. And I'd be more than happy to meet and greet you there.
You know, they're making all of these producers are making all these throwback, you know, kind of iconic decade 70s, 80s shows. You know, this is actually perfect because you are seeing the legit footage. And if you can go to one of these two premieres on Sunday night or Wednesday afternoon, like you'll be there. I mean, you're willing to answer questions, and I know you. You'll be sitting there until, you know, 7 o'clock the next night answering everybody's questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have no problem with that.
You've changed the landscape of not only New York City but the world when it comes to crime fighting and vigilante justice, I guess. I mean, do you like that word?
Yeah. Well, I've learned to have to accept the scarlet letter vigilante because even to this day, wherever I travel, since we have Guardian Angels in 13 countries, 130 cities, if people don't know my name, they'll say, oh, that's the vigilante.
Where have you gone that was the most surprising place where you've just been like, I can't believe this person actually knows who I am?
Cape Town, South Africa. Rio de Janeiro, where we have chapters. Bucyrus, Ohio, Ohio, where it's 10,000 people, where we have a chapter there, a little bucolic Bucyrus. And the far ends of the world.
Wow.
And if they don't know my name, or if they don't know Guardian Angels, they may sort of call it the Hell's Angels. They'll say, oh, that's the vigilante.
A lot of times, though, when you see movies or you see any kind of footage showing New York back in the day, you'll see you. You're often featured.
Yeah, no, I was sort of like, what can we say? A splotch on the landscape. Al Slim Shady Sharpton.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And
Ed
Donald
Koch.
Trump.
Well, and Ed
Koch and Donald Trump. They were like the four of us. We were like rotating talking heads, all of us lens lice. If you wanted to have us arrested because we were publicity whores, you'd have to put all four of us in the same cell at that time.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? That would be a great panel, the four of you.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, well, we'd have to channel Ed Koch.
It would have to be a series. Like, you couldn't just do one event.
There wouldn't be room for any one person to talk.
No, you'd have to have it at a stadium.
Exactly.
And somebody would have to be, you'd have to have, like, a Justin on the mic to shut the mic off of, you know, the president when he's talking.
We're going to have to turn the mic on for Justin B. Love from Alabama, this hipster invader into our city, about Judge Roy Moore later, because it's going to be an hour about all the pervs that have emerged, and they're emerging each day. But the big story of the day is the cold, frigid chill. Winter is finally upon us. It's November 10th.
We didn't have fall. I mean, we went literally from summer to winter.
And remember, the president is in Beijing, right, with the Red Chinese dictator. And he claimed that it was the Red Chinese who created this concept of global warming, climate change as a hoax. He hasn't mentioned it in Red China.
Well, no, because he was there on the Flattery Tour.
Right, but now we stand alone as the only country who has not signed on to the Paris Climate Accord agreement.
Yeah.
Nicaragua has signed on with the perv pedophile Ortega, who is their dictator. And Syria, the butcher Assad, has signed on. So that leaves only the United States as unwilling to acknowledge climate change and global warming, even though, Juliet, our government agency
just today
published a report. This is in the Trump administration now, not the Obama administration.
Right.
The global warming is a menace to our entire country, and that we need to do something.
But also, it points to human activity being the dominant force behind global warming. Human activity is the dominant force.
Right, so you're the president. This is your administration. You say that global warming, climate change is a hoax. You appointed as your EPA chief the former attorney general of Oklahoma, who does not believe in climate change or global warming.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he wants to belch more fossil fuel fumes into the air if he has his way. I'd like to hear from our many listeners out there. Knowing what we just went through with all the hurricanes, with the fires in California,
yeah,
with the incredible warm weather that we've had, with the globe getting warmer by the year, our government has now said climate change is for real.
The Trump administration has said this. Right. So they're contradicting what the White House is saying, which I'm so curious about. I can't imagine that they didn't try to quash this.
But it's not the first time that Trump has been contradicted by his own administration.
Well,
anyway,
he's actually contradicted himself quite a few times, as a matter of
fact. Exactly. Our numbers, 1-800-848-WABC, where all you global warming, climate change deniers come front and center.
Average global warming, the global temperature, rather, the increase since 1900. Okay, so we're talking about hundreds of years, 1.8 degrees. So people are like, no, big, everything's fine. You know, we don't have to worry about it here and now. Remember, it's not just our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids. I mean, we're talking about millions of years from now. We'd like this planet to
normally, what? When we mention this,
the
phones are lighted. No, they light up. But I think maybe even our curmudgeons, our contrarians who don't believe in global warming, climate change, are beginning to accept it. Because it's a reality.
If you were one of the resistors and you've changed, you can call in too and tell us what it is that sent. What was the impetus that sent you over the edge into the believer realm?
Unbelievable.
I'm interested in that too.
The Trump administration report acknowledges global warming, but our president and his EPA appointees say it's a hoax created by Red China.
There is something.
1-800-848-9222. And to the phones we go. First up in the queue about global warming is Murray from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Murray.
Hi, good afternoon, folks. Curtis, if I remember correctly, maybe a year ago, when the global warming topic arose, that you were also one of the people who were denying global warming. Aren't you contradicting yourself a little bit right now?
Oh, snap.
Completely, Murray, because you're right. A year ago, I was a denier. Even though
Murray.
I've been an environmentalist since I was a kid, but I was a denier. But I have seen such documentary evidence, and we're experiencing the changes on our globe so extreme that when Assad in Syria agrees that there's global warming, who had been a denier, and Ortega in Nicaragua now agrees there's global warming, and the only holdout is Trump, I'm not standing with the only holdout.
We had seven cycles of this glacial advance and retreat, you know, and we had situations where the Earth's orbit would change, and that would affect things. But if you go on NASA's website, they talk about the current warming trend. It's particularly significant because it's been at its most extreme and unprecedented over decades.
So Murray, do you understand why I flipped the script on it?
Yes, I do. But what about the piece of Antarctica the size of Manhattan that just broke off around 2 weeks ago? They're still, I mean, the deniers are still denying that. Even the people in Washington are denying this. I mean, if that's not an obvious problem.
Well, clearly, Murray, there's a chasm in the Trump administration in that, in one respect, the same government he's in charge of releases a report that says global warming is real, and yet he and his EPA chief believe it was a hoax created by the Red Chinese. Let's go to the phones if we can. Next up in the queue is Christian, who's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Christian.
Hey, Curtis. Great show as always. Love listening to you guys on the internet. Wanted to just quickly say you should interview the MIT chair of oceanic and atmospheric science, Dr. Ronald Prinn, P-R-I-N-N. He basically says that we're underreporting the numbers, the pollution numbers, that they're much bigger than they than is actually reported. You should also have a focus on Kentucky, because you look at who's in charge of the Senate leadership, where everything gets slowed down, Mitch McConnell from here. Just you know, a couple of quick figures here. Kentucky, his home state, we're home to the most polluted river in America, the Ohio, which is 3 times more polluted than the Mississippi. His district, Jefferson County, which is Louisville, has more brownfields than just about anywhere else.
But Christian, I can give you even a better rationale. We just saw the vicious attack of Dr. Boucher against the ophthalmologist, U.S. Senator Rand Paul. Yep. They were neighbors. And it was about leaves, you know, blowing from one person's property to the next. Now, remember, with global warming, the leaves take longer to fall. So that's why now all of a sudden they're fighting over leaves in my on my property versus your property. And Rand Paul ends up with 6 broken ribs and probably won't be on the floor of the U.S. Senate for a month of Sundays. You see what global warming leads to?
It leads to fisticuffs.
That's right. A U.S. Senator getting attacked.
I don't know if it was about global warming, but, you know, it's my.
You don't believe that?
I don't. No, I don't. I don't.
What do you think? It was something else?
You know, I don't know.
Come on,
politics.
You're a gossip monger. Tell us what you heard through the grapevine. Come on, you're in Yenta.
Gotta do my investigation before I start to, you know, spew my knowledge.
You, it was over leaves.
It was not over freaking leaves.
Well, because he had to, remember, he had the lawnmower.
He's blowing
the leaves into the other guy's property.
I will say, my husband and I are starting to look for places, and I'm like, we are not going to live near anybody because I am the type that will start getting in my neighbor's face, and it will be not a pleasant situation for the neighborhood.
Oh, wow. So you're going down to Deliverance?
No, not in that way. No, I just, you know, I don't.
Well, I've seen your husband. He looks like he could fit in with those three-eyed cousin fornicators down there.
Excuse me? Oh, my God,
John. Judge Roy Moore.
I apologize for him. He's a horrible little man across the table for me.
I'm not saying he's like that. I've met him.
He looks, he's gorgeous. What are you talking about?
Well, it's his hard metal, you know, the heavy metal facade.
But he's got nice hair. He looks like Jon Snow.
He looks like Lucifer.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He looks like Satan.
A little mixture of Lucifer
Satan,
with
who's taking
with
down Judge Roy Moore
and Charles Manson.
Yes, but anyway, on that note, let's get on the news.
Sorry,
headlines.
John. You're hot to me.
This week, 77 WABC and Curtis Sliwa salutes our veterans, Navy SEAL and best-selling author Rob O'Neill.
And then we get called, Captain Richard Phillips has just been taken by Somali pirates. Your team's going to get him now. Less than 16 hours after we got the message, we're in the Indian Ocean. And a day and a half later, we rescued Captain Richard Phillips with some shots from our snipers. We were just there to rescue the hostage. But as always, the perfect plan, we came up with 5 great plans. The perfect plan never exists. It's always life is what happens around you as you're planning.
Veterans Day, we salute the veterans of yesterday and today. 77 WABC.
Oh, I know that your husband, the heavy metal rocker that he is, traveling the world with his heavy metal bands, has been to Sunset Boulevard.
The girls' place?
To all the strip joints on Sunset
Boulevard.
Let
me ask him. I'll text him right now. He better say no.
No. Of course he's been there. I've been there. I mean,
you have? Yeah, and also, I hate to say it, but I mean, those girls are like...
Well, not all of them.
Prime-level real estate.
Yeah, but not all of them are girls.
Oh, stop that.
Oh, no, it's true.
If the ones that are dancing up there...
I tell you.
You would be able to tell very easily.
Oh, no, you can't. Not nowadays.
Well, how's that possible?
Nowadays. The gender benders.
What, are they wearing, like, you know, blousy pants?
Well, no. Surgery has reached such levels that you can completely invert everything that was overt and turn somebody who looked like a normal guy into a drop-dead gorgeous woman who's all of a sudden pole dancing.
Have you ever hit on a woman who previously was a man? That you know of?
Not that I know of.
I'm guaranteeing that you have.
No, I don't think so.
I guarantee it.
I don't think so. Because when I was hitting on them heavily, that was back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, holy.
At the late night club.
Are you kidding me?
The gender benders there, they, you could really tell.
Listen,
the guy. They had beards.
Before the beautiful Nancy Pergola came into your life. Yeah. I can guarantee you that you're out there trying to snack on,
there's
as you
no
say.
No doubt, but I don't ever think that I snacked on a gender bender. But
you're saying, how would you even be able to tell? Because some of them, they are so convincingly,
nowadays, yes.
I mean, they're women.
Nowadays. In
nowadays.
Fact, when I went to the Philippines to organize the Guardian Angels, they have gender bender contests of guys who look just like women, drop-dead gorgeous women.
Mm-hmm.
I saw 12 of them. They have beauty pageants. And the Filipinos, they're all into this. They love this stuff.
Yeah.
They can't get it out. I couldn't tell any one of the 12 contestants that I was there looking at as a judge. You know, they picked me out as one of...
It's hysterical that you're, like, over there doing Guardian Angels stuff and you're judging these
contests.
Could
not. Well, because in the Philippines, that's like, that's
now,
a big thing.
Okay, let me ask you, is the feeling towards, you know, as you say, the gender benders... If you're a man, is it sort of more accepted in the Philippines than it is here? If you happen to be out at a bar and you start talking to somebody and you find out that she was originally a man?
No, I think because it's a heavily Catholic country that there still is a lot of prejudice against that. But, you know, culturally, it's taken away from religiously. Culturally,
mm-hmm.
it's more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have these contests. I kid you not. You could not identify any of these contestants as having at one time been men.
Filipino people are some of the most beautiful people. I mean, just, you know, the women are stunning.
Yeah, so every time
and
you go on
and apparently so are the men.
Every time you go on a cruise, because I know there are a lot of people listening to us, they live to go on cruises
I do.
So they can get...
I'm one.
Right, and you love it, you know, to get the extra bacon on the buffet.
Oh.
Most of the crews,
totally.
As you know, are Filipinos.
Extra.
Most of the crews on these cruise liners are Filipinos. They come from the same villages, you know, from Manila down to Mindanao.
Wait, what cruise liners are you talking about?
The low-budget ones.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, you're high-end. You're a
celebrity, excuse me. Sorry.
But anyway, the reason that we play this song, Girls, Girls, Girls,
mm-hmm.
is that the president's aide-de-camp bodyguard, most loyal person in the world to him, who has been with him for years, I think formerly a police officer, has testified up on the Hill that when he accompanied Donald Trump to the World Beauty Contest there in Moscow,
right.
that the son of his host... was offering up 5 of the best Moscow prostitutes to him.
Which is apparently what you do over there, from my experience. Would you like to hear my
Well, let me hear your experience, and then I'll give you my experience in Moscow.
No, I'd like to hear your experience first.
Okay. So I'm going over to Moscow to organize a Guardian Angel group because I've been invited by, believe it or not, the mayor of Moscow at the time.
Wow.
Reshkov. But boy, this gets into a bizarre story.
Oh, I bet it does.
So I'm taking with me from Berlin, Guardian Angels in Germany,
uh-huh.
some of whom were born in East Berlin, so they speak Russian.
Right.
That's what they were taught. So we're good. We take the train all the way through East Germany and then Poland and Belarus. Oh, man, that was like being back in the 40s and 50s in Minsk. And then
when was this?
This was like 94.
Okay, so
this is
90.
When... Yeltsin was in charge, and the oligarchs were stealing everything in Russia with the breakup of glasnost and perestroika.
You mean when they started to do that?
Yeah, when they just started stealing like these.
We know that that's continuing.
So the country was like changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm there at the invitation of the mayor, and we're being taken around by the police, who are actually our hosts. And they're looking at people and they're saying, that guy has a bandit face. I said, what do you mean a bandit face? Oh, he's from Azerbaijan. He's from Armenia. He's a thief. I said, how do you know he's a thief? Just because he's from a different part of the old Soviet Union. Can't trust them. They're all thieves.
Uh-huh.
So that was a bad experience. But then at the hotel, we were staying at the Hotel Gorbachev. Nobody was there. All marble, brand new. You had a bunch of crazy Italians on the top floor who were engineers who were there on a contract. One of whom jumped off the roof because it was World Cup time and they lost to Brazil in the shootout.
He like jumped off the roof as in goodbye?
And splattered right in the plaza there. We're looking at the guy as he had his last breath over a stupid soccer game.
It was probably a lot of vodka too, I would imagine.
No doubt. But then all of a sudden the prostitutes were coming to us, knocking on the door. We are presence of the Moscow police. We are here to service you.
Okay.
So now I have to tell the other guys, do not open up your door. Because they're going to be filming this. They're going to be blackmailing us, extorting us. We're not going to be able to get back unless we cough up some rubles. Or they're going to want, at that time, English sterling, British Deutschmarks, or they're going to want American dollars.
Yeah, that's very smart, and it's probably very true.
But
it's
that's what they do with
all
their guests.
So listen to this. So I went to Ukraine. This was back in 1999. I was traveling. This is when I was working at the Fox News Channel based out in the Los Angeles Bureau, and we did a story with the California Air National Guard. Flew out to Ukraine. The Air National Guard and the Ukrainian military were working together, i.e. we were training them. They were not working with us. But we went to the hotel one night. We all, you know, I think it was the first night we were there. And the photographer that was traveling with us was the sweetest, most religious, very conservative, sweet angel, you know, father. And he comes down the next day and he was horrified because he got the knock on his door.
Yep.
You know, and he is, hi, can I help you? And it's a beautiful Ukrainian woman.
Oh, they dropped dead gorgeous.
Believe me. I mean, it was like I was a heathen. I was wearing my sweatpants. I didn't know you weren't supposed to do that. The women there get dressed to the hilt with the makeup and the hair and everything. But he was freaking out because he was like, she wanted to come in. She was. I go, yeah. I mean, that's what they do apparently out there. This was 1999. I don't know if things changed, but there was definitely that element all around our hotel. I mean, the Air National Guardsmen, we had pilots there, some good-looking guys, and I have no idea what happened behind closed doors.
A lot
doors.
Of guys, they fall into that Venus flytrap, and then the extortion begins. Because remember, they'll tell you, we'll let your wife know. We'll let your kids know.
Well, I wish somebody would have let this poor guy know ahead of time, like somebody from the Air National Guard, that this was possibly going
to
happen.
But it should be so obvious to these guys.
This guy, I'm telling you, he literally was born in the 50s. Okay. I mean, it's like he was from the 50s.
But in this case,
very naive.
Both Trump and his bodyguard said, thank you, but no thank you.
Right.
First off, we know that Trump is a germaphobe. He had to overcome a lot just to shake people's hands. Because initially, when I first met him, he didn't shake hands.
Well, a lot of germaphobes, though, if they're attracted to a woman or a man, that, you know, all of a sudden the germaphobia kind of
but wait a second.
Dissipates.
Remember the dossier that the DNC ended up paying for, Hillary and Podesta.
You mean the one that was written by the British?
Right.
The spy. British spy, yeah.
It talked about not only was Trump with the prostitutes in that hotel room, but they gave him a golden shower.
Okay.
And I knew right away, there is no way.
Can't even talk about this guy.
Right, Donald Trump. Now, he might be a perv, but there's no way he's going to take a golden shower as a germaphobe.
Who would, by the way? Like, what in the...
There are freaks. There are a lot of freaks out
there. Okay, I'm not going to judge, but I mean, just it's unsanitary.
So,
just be honest.
In this case, the bodyguard...
Keith Schiller.
Says no, and Trump says no, but nicely to their host. They're doing business with them.
Yet.
But now I understand you had a situation in which you were with Trump and the bodyguard. Were you?
Yes.
Under what circumstances?
We were not supposed to discuss this.
Juliet, honey. Oh.
Well, no. I mean, I went to lunch with Trump.
Yes.
He invited me when I was working on Fox and Friends Weekend. This is the early 2000s.
Well, that was his favorite show. That was his favorite
show. It was, and he was apparently a big fan of mine.
Yes. I'll bet.
He asked me he invited me to lunch, and I went to lunch in Trump Tower, and it was lovely, and, you know, right in the public area.
And he
was
a total gentleman.
Total gentleman.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and the bodyguard was with him every step of the way, right?
Every step of the way, including the elevator.
Loyal, back to us.
And this is him. This is the same guy, Mr. Schiller.
Right.
Yeah.
So I believe him. I believe him.
I believe him, too.
And so this whole thing about that dossier and why Hillary and Podesta would pay millions of dollars for that information but it just shows you how dirty both sides of the campaign were towards one another, focusing more on digging up dirt.
I got to tell you, everybody that falls all over the place for Hillary Clinton, you know, the Miley Cyruses and everybody, crying. And hello. I mean, this is what they do. They do opposition research. But, I mean, don't think that Queen Hillary is averse to this stuff.
She's obviously not at all.
Is anybody
working
with her.
But this is thumbs up for Donald Trump. It is clear he said no to the hookers. A lot of Americans have fallen into that trap and have paid dearly as a result of that, because the Russians then either hold it over you if they're doing business with you or if you're a government official, or they look to extort money from you because they'll expose this, like organized crime would, to your family, your friends, you know, your inner circle of business confidants, and it could destroy your career. Anyway,
and the thing is, these women are so alluring. They really are beautiful.
And they'll do anything.
Stunning. What does that mean?
That means they'll give you. Like the maitre d' gives you the menu of options at a restaurant.
They come in.
They give you a menu of options. No, whether you're into S&M, freaky deaky stuff, three ways, four ways, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. They give you a card in the language of your nation of origin, telling you the choices that they have. If you
they have the different menus with the different. big business there.
What is
apparently.
It that Vladimir Putin said about his prostitutes? They were the best in the world, remember?
No,
he said,
I don't remember.
Our prostitutes are the best in the world. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Curtis Lewa. The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa?
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
Wait, explain this.
7 minutes after the hour of one, Juliet Huddy in the house.
What's happening? I don't understand the segue here, and this is, you are the brilliant, you are the meister of segues, the segue meister.
Well, but as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, and we're bundled up because the hawk is talking out there, it's cold. We are broadcasting on the 50,000-powerful watts of sound, courtesy in these nice, warm, and toasty studios to NJDiet.com.
And you look, by the way, very nice with your little red sweater and your little cap.
Oh, I'm totally layered up. Because I cannot afford to get a cold now that I have the colitis Crohn's disease. Because can't drink tea. Can't have lozenges.
Malady.
Can't have any of that.
You can't have lozenges?
No. No, because it totally throws my stomach out of whack.
Can you take vitamins?
Depends on what they are. Very limited. Everything throws me off. So I keep a schmata around my head. You know, I got to stay nice and warm and toasty.
You should look like one of those hipsters with the, you know, wearing the hoodies. When they just have the hoodie on over the beret.
Or one of the elf... Elf, you know, pullover stocking caps.
Elf?
Yeah,
pullover
elf.
Stocking caps.
An elf stocking cap. Yeah, you know, Matt Dahl, our board operator.
Oh, I see.
Our operations director.
Okay.
He wears
sometimes you speak a language, it's Curtis.
So does his hipster millennial Justin B. Love, who's going to be weighing in on this because he comes from Alabama where the three-eyed cousin fornicators reign. Why I play Jerry Lee Lewis. Because as great a star as he was in the era of rock and roll, remember, he married a 13-year-old first cousin.
I thought it was related to the title of the song. My mind just went into a bad place.
Who is the greatest rock and roller of all times?
Bono?
No. Elvis Presley, right?
Okay, no.
God, that's
I mean, are you kidding me right now? You're saying...
You pick a foreigner, Bono?
Well,
it's Elvis.
That's what it is,
right?
Have you ever seen Bono?
Yeah,
live?
I hate him.
How about Jim Morrison?
No, I love Jim Morrison.
Okay,
the
Doors. He's pretty. Did you see the documentary, by the way?
No, but I love the Doors. Jim Morrison, L.A. Woman, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Oh, their songs were incredible.
But don't try to distract me and deflect me from Elvis Presley.
Oh, well, I don't get it.
Who was known at the time in his prime as America, the world's number one rock and roll.
You know how long ago that was?
14-year-old girls.
That was a long time ago.
So now, revelations about...
At least to the 20th century.
Judge Moore... who, in his 30s, apparently had relationships with girls 16, 17, 18. Doesn't seem to be a problem for Southerners. But a 14-year-old girl that he had befriended because apparently as an assistant district attorney, he saw her mother outside court. She was in a domestic dispute, you know, family court.
Oh,
he said, don't let your daughter go in there because it's going to get nasty. And the woman said, you're right. I'll watch her.
And the woman, rightly so, probably at the time, is looking at this guy thinking, okay, he's a lawyer. He's you know, he's...
Hold on, wait a second. You see Judge Roy Moore, that's a lech.
Okay, well, this was many, many years ago. I mean, this was like, what, 79, I think it was?
Right, he was 30, in his 30s.
You know, at that time, maybe, you know, our brains weren't as fully formed. We were like, okay, a nice, man with the nice suit on who is a lawyer and works in the courthouse, he offers to take care of my kid while I'm... What a nice man he is.
And he starts, perving on the 14-year-old on a regular basis.
I mean, like, can we get into the details?
Yeah, well, the most egregious is that now this woman, who is much older...
She's in her 50s now.
Right, says, when I was 14, he drove me to his home, took all my clothes off, and then took my hand and put it on his three-piece set. And that's when I said, no, take me home. And he agreed to do that. He didn't take it any further. There were other occasions where he took her to his house and he started to kiss her.
Now, how did this even happen is the question a lot of people are asking. While he was there with her outside the courthouse and the mom was inside, he was, befriending her and asked for her phone number.
Right.
And so this girl at, 14 is thinking, well, he was 30 at this point. So he's not like, little girl. I mean, he was maybe a good looking guy back, 100 years ago. Let's just assume that he was.
Yeah.
This girl's thinking, and again, it was the South back then, so you could be right.
I mean, back then, what's the big deal?
Well, things have evolved a bit,
He didn't have sex. That's their answer. He didn't go the whole nine yards.
So this woman now, she's 53 years old. She's working as a customer service rep. And she said, and this is so typical, I think it's such an important point to make. She said, why didn't she come out? She's like, I had three messy divorces. I mean, don't we know what that's all about?
Right.
A messy financial history. And she's, like, I look like kind of a train wreck to the outside, and I'm going to accuse this guy who's the Judge Roy Moore, an upstanding member of the community, members of the community, right? Think
well, let's open up our phone lines on that. Whose side do you take in this, ladies and gentlemen? Judge Roy Moore or the four women who are now accusing him to the Washington Post of perving on them? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. First up in defense of Judge Roy Moore. I predicted it.
How sweet.
Our colleague, Mark Levin, couldn't wait. 6 o'clock.
Let's hear this.
This is what he had to say.
And yet the public, we have to sit here because the way this was reported and the timing it was reported and scratch our heads. And I believe that's intentional. Oh, we heard from a little birdie at one of these events that Roy Moore, that he was chasing teenagers 40 years ago. Okay, if that's true, it took 40 years to tell us? Well, the people wouldn't come forward. But the little birdie comes forward right before the general election? I'm not buying this. I'm not talking about the allegations. I'm not buying this reporting and the way in which this was done.
Huh?
So has he been paying attention to anything that's been happening over the last year?
No, he lives in a bunker in Virginia. But the point being is, he might believe the allegations, but he has a problem with the reporting of it.
With the journalists who are investigating, probably spending 27 hours a day focusing on this situation.
But think of that. The allegations may be true, but our colleague Mark Levin has a problem with the way they're being reported.
But the truth is, he just doesn't want to believe it because he likes this guy. He's been a supporter of Judge Roy Moore.
And
that's what
worse.
It comes down to.
The rock-ribbed, all-American conservative voice of reason from Franklin Square, Long Island, my very dear combatty chief, Sean Hannity. We used to share studios here at WABC.
Used to love him.
He said something on his radio show that indicates that he probably is not from Franklin Square, Long Island, but actually considers himself a resident of Alabama, where he first broke into commercial talk radio.
He was apparently like 32, and he dated one girl was 18, one girl was 17. They never said he did that. There was no sexual, there was kissing involved. And then they're saying this one encounter with a 14.
And consensual.
And consensual, that's true. And there's, I don't know how you find out the truth.
Well, there was a second woman that came out, Wendy Miller. She says she was 14 and working as a Santa's helper at a mall when Moore first approached her. He continued to approach her and approach her. Her mother said, not going to happen, until finally she was, I believe, 16, and they went out.
You see, this is the problem. This is the problem. We know there are a lot of guys who are pervs. It doesn't matter their ideology.
Mm-hmm.
For some guys, it's in their DNA. We'll eventually figure out why guys perv on underage girls or women in general or other men or boys.
Right.
Or why, like in the case of CK, they expose themselves Louis without having sex. But there are a lot of guys who do this. Why do we have to always go to the wall to defend people of the same ideology and not accept the fact this guy could just be a total pervert?
Well, I mean, on one hand, you want to think that people that you have respected and known in your life, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And there is something called loyalty, but it gets to a certain point where it just becomes you're looking like an idiot and you're basically lending credibility or I guess justifying despicable behavior.
Well, let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is Barbara calling from Rockland County. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC.
Hi.
Hi. I love you guys together. And
thanks.
I totally do not believe the girl. And Roy should go on and take the position. And I love Trump. So too bad for everybody who doesn't.
Why do you not believe her? What is it about this situation?
It's getting down to the 25th hour, and it's a little ridiculous that, you know, it's like, shut up, sit down. You should have came out a long time ago. He didn't do anything to you.
Did you hear what I was saying about the fact that the first woman, her last name was Korfman, she was saying that, you know, she just felt like I'd gone through several divorces. I just didn't feel, you know, messy financial history. I knew that if I came out, I'm going up against a man who is, a respected man in the community, not to mention the country to some people. And she just felt like I'm going up against a machine.
I don't believe her. And it's too bad, and it's too late, so sit down, you know?
Now, Barbara, okay, so you don't believe her, but what about these other women? All of a sudden,
didn't hear all their stories, so why are they coming out at the last minute?
Well, Barbara, haven't you seen since Harvey Weinstein, the revelations, how many women have come forth?
I definitely believe everything with Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K.
Oh, because they're liberals, because they're progressives and Democrats. The partisan idiotship of not understanding that men are perverts, whether they're conservatives or liberals or apolitical, men, many of them, are perverts. Can't you accept that, Barbara?
No, you're a little too extreme. Not all men are perverts.
No, of course not. Definitely not.
Nobody said that, but immediately you're defending Judge Moore because he's of your political ideology.
What?
Because you believe in his politics, you go to the wall and defend him.
I'm not extreme right. I'm a moderate Republican, and I don't believe, I don't believe everything that everyone says, and I just don't believe this.
I'm going to ask you a question really fast, Barbara, just, this has nothing to do with my situation, my employment at Fox News or departure. When you heard about the Bill O'Reilly allegations and reports in the paper, New York Times breaking stories, what were your thoughts?
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I thought. Me and my sister loved watching you early in the morning. Then one day I said, where did Juliet go? So then months later we hear, and I totally believe you with your situation, whatever happened, because you just seem like a really cool person. You don't seem like you would just slap the gums for no reason. And me and my sister really liked you watching, all of a sudden one day you're missing. So then when everything came out, I said, she doesn't seem like that kind of person that would just, but I don't believe every single one, because Gloria Allred's a nut. She just parades people out. She's a nut.
This is not Gloria Allred. Barbara, this is not Gloria Allred.
I think Barbara's saying, it sounds to me like you're saying there's just this sort of vibe that you get, and you're trying to look at it each situation
with
context and color.
Here's Judge Moore himself talking.
Crime, corruption, immorality, abortion, sodomy, sexual perversion sweep our land.
We need to make America good again. Mm-hmm. We return the knowledge of God to our land, and God will heal our land.
God will heal our land. What, from perverts like you, Judge Moore? Who believe, now remember, when we talk about the execution of those children and those teachers in Connecticut.
Yeah.
What did Judge Moore say? It's because God was angry.
Well, he has argued that America's shift to secularism is the reason that we're having 9/11, that we're having mass shootings. God is angry with us. God is angry. we are losing the acknowledgement of God.
God
that is
may
according
be angry
to,
for him for perving on a 14-year-old girl?
Well, I guess we'll find out in the afterlife.
Well, when we come back, we have to talk to an Alabaman here.
That's, yes.
Justin B. Love, to understand.
JBL.
You cannot believe the defense that people in Alabama are using. They're referring to Jesus and Mary in defending this pervert, Judge Moore. 1-800-848-WABC. Our producer and phone screener, Justin B. Love, hipster, millennial invader from Alabama.
Aw.
And Justin.
So, such a great guy, too.
I want to read to you some of the supportive accolades that have been given to Judge Moore after the Washington Post printed out these revelations.
All right.
One of his prime supporters said, look, take the Bible, Zachariah and Elizabeth, for instance. Zachariah was extremely old to marry Elizabeth, and they became the parents of John the Baptist. And let's not stop there. Look at Joseph and Mary. Mary was a teenager, and Joseph was an adult carpenter. They became parents of Jesus. Even if everything that the Washington Post said is true, I'm voting for Judge Moore.
Oh, boy.
is that typical of folks from Alabama?
It's typical of the politicians because they feed to the red meat of the base. But Alabama, it's part of the Bible Belt for a reason. Protestants down there, they really do. Obama was right. They cling to their guns and their religion. They don't agree with abortion. They don't agree with gay marriage. So I'm not surprised anyone
they
brings
agree
this
with
up.
With sexual harassment and sexual predatory behavior.
Well, like, you can't prove this.
Right.
Juliet, you can't prove it.
Yeah, the mentality.
Well,
the mentality.
Here's another one that was very predominant in terms of feedback from people in Alabama who have to vote in this upcoming election. Look, I would vote for Judge Moore even if every one of these accusations is true because I won't vote for the Democrat Doug Jones.
I mean, people do toe the party line. Maybe he just shouldn't vote. Maybe he should just not vote. But I would not be surprised if Roy Moore wins this election. He legally cannot be taken off the ballot. So his name will appear, and you have to write in another candidate.
Wouldn't that be interesting? But, a lot of our callers are saying, look, I mean, the guy is innocent until proven guilty. But at what point, after the umpteenth woman comes out and says that when she was, 13 years old, he was preying on her.
Reporters never give you all their information.
Well, you're friends with people down there, like reporters.
I'm friends with reporters down there. But the guy I trust the most, John Archibald, he was on Rachel Maddow last night. He had not heard a word of this until last week. So that's how tight-lipped this was kept in Montgomery.
If the allegations
are true, that's how tight-lipped it was. He's been covering Roy Moore for 25 years. He had not heard a word of this until last week.
That's the thing that I find curious.
Well, I find that oftentimes local reporters will protect their local figures, depending on if it's
what
a blue
local
state.
Reporter would not, do that? Not, I mean, you want the
state
scoop.
And a red state.
Not Roy Moore. John Archibald is to the left, and in fact, he does not vote because to maintain neutrality.
I'm telling you Alabamans, you're all three-eyed cousin fornicators.
Don't listen.
That's not true.
The belief that you could have a relationship with a 13- and 14-year-old and it's okay. You even poisoned Sean Hannity, who went down there to launch his broadcasting career, and he was saying, oh, well, was it consensual?
Well, look, Huntsville's different than the rest of the state, okay?
What did you do to Sean Hannity?
Yeah, I take no credit for Sean Hannity.
Anyway, let's go to the phones, and it's Mike, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Mike?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, what I don't understand is why do you lump Judge Moore in with all these other people? You know, this media is coming out with all of these stories right now. And it could be some stories are true, could be some are false, but each case should be taken individually. You know, here you have a case where there's a 14-year-old that said something happened, let's say, 30 years ago. He says, she says... And, Curtis, I'm surprised you're taking the bait. You know, she said it because you don't like Judge Moore. And I'm not saying you should like him or dislike him. But you've had not a nice thing to say about him since he's been the nominee.
No, he's
you
a jerk.
Like to see him go down.
He's a Neanderthal. He's a knuckle dragger.
Could be he is, but that doesn't mean he's a molester.
Right. But the point is when you have a series of women come forward, we're not talking one isolated woman here, Mike. A series of women, and there's more to come. There's more to come.
Can I? I'm just raising my hand, but we're not on television, so nobody can see me doing this except for you, Curtis. But the thing is, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, these papers have broken these stories, and they do tend to hold on to things because they need more verification, but they usually don't release. I know for a fact the New York Times does not release the stories unless they are darn sure that they have the verification and that there's also more to come.
In fact, up next, we're going to talk about the guy who said, I was just a perv. I didn't sexually assault women, Louis C.K. He now has come out and fully acknowledged he is a pervert. I'm waiting for Judge Moore to fall on his sword or to actually ride off into the sunset with his cowboy hat and his 38 on and maybe just go back to being the curmudgeon, the Neanderthal, the just total, total hater.
How do you really feel about him?
Oh, look, come on. Look at him. He's a lech.
That was a joke. That was a
Judge Moore. He's a lech. But anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Curtis. Mr. Sliwa,
yes.
We have some breaking news.
What's that?
Well, you know, obviously, we've been talking about the fact that Louis C.K., very famous comedian, has been accused by women of masturbating in front of them. They were unwitting participants, I guess you could say. He has just released a statement, and he has confessed. He says, my accusers were all telling the truth. He basically goes on to explain his conduct. You know, he says he's remorseful. He said he's caused so much pain for people. And now he's just going to, he said he's basically spent his entire career talking. Now he's just going to shut up and listen. I mean, it's very contrite. It's about, you know, I don't know. It's fairly hefty statement. He said, I wish I had reacted to their admiration of me by being a good example to them as a man and giving them some guidance as a comedian. Because I admired their work. But instead, what he did was, you know, essentially put them in a position where they were fearful and they felt like if they didn't give him some sort of accolades or sort of, you know, positive reaction or didn't go, you know, scream to the world that this guy's a pervert, you know, they were hoping that they would have a career.
But think of what he did.
Well, it's, yeah.
C.K. Lewis. No one is accusing Louis C.K. Friend, I might add, of Bill de Blasio, number one supporter. Actually called up WNYC Radio, faked it, you know, like he was a regular caller, and extolled, praise on de Blasio in his first term like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Has done fundraisers for de Blasio. De Blasio naturally now saying he's going to have to explain himself. What I want explained is, because we've seen this with Harvey Weinstein, we've seen this with a number of guys, is they feel this desire to pull their manhood out. Prove they don't have erectile dysfunction, and then play with themselves in front of their victim.
I actually did a little research on this, and I read some comments by experts, one in particular from the Center for Healthy Sex in Los Angeles. I mean, it's not really a poo-poo type of thing. This is a legit organization that investigates this type of stuff and studies it. They basically say that when a guy does that, it's basically his attempt to shock the victims. He likes to see the look of fear on their face, the look of horror on their face. To him, is a turn-on. It arouses him.
All right, that, remember, we saw in the Harvey Weinstein case, because the women described him as then, once he did that, once he started to play with himself,
right,
that he would get super aggressive. He would become like a predator.
They're acting out sexual hostility, or another term for it is eroticized rage, with their most threatening body part, at least in a woman's point of view, that's their most threatening body part. It's not the arm. It's not the fist.
Right.
It's that.
Okay.
We know why.
I'll go with that.
And in their minds, they're not going to, you know, then you're like, well, if they're so violently minded, then why are they not physically assaulting the woman? They don't do that because they don't consider themselves rapists.
So for Louis C.K. in the top of his field, Harvey Weinstein in the top of his field,
at all,
to the perv who stands on the platform in Times Square waiting for the 2 or the 3 train to come in and pulls his manhood out and pleasurizes himself in front of people, all three are the same.
Yeah.
All, and you know what I think it is? I think at that time when they were going through puberty, and all of a sudden they got erections,
mm-hmm.
and they started to self-pleasurize themselves, either their mother cold-busted them.
There you go.
And totally humiliated them.
Yep.
Or in their first sexual adventures,
mm-hmm.
they had premature ejaculation, and whoever their sexual partner was, whether male or female or whomever, either made fun of them or lambasted them.
So but basically, it's a hatred towards women. This is almost a revenge in their minds, whether they are acknowledging it, you know, or it's just something in the subconscious. It's a revenge being taken out.
No, it's a statement of saying, no, I am a man. You see, I am a man. You know, and it goes back to that
massive insecurity.
That primal scream
as a teenager. Yes, you're absolutely right.
You got pimples on your face. I mean, look, Louis C.K., we saw in the case of Harvey Weinstein and Anthony the Weiner Wiener, these were not guys that women were flocking to when they were in high school.
Well, I mean, and they do it on the phone. Other big power players that we've spoken about do it over the phone. They can't see the women, but they can tell that the women know what's going on.
I think the fact that you grab your manhood and you get it to where it's in a turgid state, not a flaccid state of saying, yeah, I really am a man. You know, it's almost like a rage. I'm a
That's
man.
That's what I'm saying. It's the erotic rage.
And you don't necessarily have to touch the woman, have sex with the
because
woman.
Because these men don't think that they are rape. They don't think that they are violent predators because they equate violence with physical touching. This is still, it's horrifying. It's scary for women. And, you know, some people are saying, well, why didn't they just walk out of the room? Well, again, now we're talking about this other part of this, which is women whose careers could potentially be helped. And it's like, well, are you just a gold digger then? Is that what it's all about?
Of course, but I think more importantly, now that all of a sudden there's this tsunami of people coming forward and explaining to us what these men of power or these homeless men, you know, on a subway platform are doing, is that we have to have open discussions. Why is this happening? What are the roots of this? What are the psychological issues?
You nailed it right on
that these guys are going through because it's happening so often.
You nailed it on the head. It goes back to childhood. Typically, will go back to childhood. Every single psychiatrist,
remember what Dr. Spock said. Everything for a guy, especially, is related to when you first sat on the porcelain palace. Like, I'm looking at Matt Dahl here, who's operating our boards here. Clearly, here is a guy who had issues when he first had to. This is what Dr. Spock said. Okay. White guys have problems in their life.
You shouldn't use his last name for this.
Is that true for all men? No. Does it affect some men that when they were potty trained, they have issues, and now there's a rage throughout the rest of their life? That is true.
And
Matt Dahl is a perfect example of that.
Something else that he says in this statement, Louis C.K., we're just saying, who just released a statement, apologizing. He says, I took advantage of the fact that I was widely admired in my and their community, because the women that he did this to were up-and-coming comedians. He said that disabled them from sharing their story, and it brought hardship to them when they tried to share their story, because he said people who looked up to me didn't want to hear it.
This was Louis C.K. in one of his stand-ups.
There is no greater threat to women than men. We're the number one threat to women.
Isn't that incredible that he was saying that? He obviously believes it.
He says in here, I didn't think I was doing any of this, you know, this power playing with them because my position allowed me not to think about it. So which is it, Lewis?
Our numbers, 1-800-848-WABC. And the movie that was supposed to preview at the Paris Artsy Fartsy Cinema in the Shadow of the Plaza Hotel today has been canceled. Here's a little bit of the trailer.
I mean, everybody's a pervert. I'm a pervert. We're all perverts. Who cares?
That's the lead line in the...
He wrote this, I take it.
Yeah. So he's basically... It's almost like, I'm a pervert.
But here's
catch
the problem.
Me.
Yeah, but here's
catch
the thing.
Me.
But people in this community, people in the comedy circuit knew this. People in Hollywood and in entertainment film knew about Harvey Weinstein. People, the executives, I'm reading this because it came out yesterday at Fox News, 21st Century Fox... They knew that there were issues with Bill O'Reilly because they had in his contract that he can't be dismissed just because of an allegation. The allegation had to be proven in court. All of these women settled. He allegedly pushed them to settle. Fox pushed this to settle because had it gone to court, he would have been fired.
Well, And it's like Harvey Weinstein's contract with Miramax, in which as long as he paid out settlements,
it's the same thing.
Miramax didn't want to have any involvement with it whatsoever.
It's the same freaking thing. How can you be a patron of these companies that do this? How are the people that are loyal to these companies? How can you literally wake up and look at yourself when you're patronizing a company, when you're watching a person who has a clause in their contract where they can't be dismissed?
I'll tell you why.
There is no greater threat to women than men. We're the number one threat to women.
It's totally true.
It's not just men. No, but let me tell you something. These corporate folks that are all protecting each other, or these Hollywood folks that are all protecting each other, or the guys at the gym down there. It's men and women, people who are in the hierarchy.
Oh yeah,
these are the ones who should be opening their mouths, and instead they shut their traps.
I know, but men,
and they're just as guilty.
Men know better because they know how other men are, and they've been making excuses for this behavior instead of having a man to man conversation.
What about the women in the HR departments and the other vice presidents
who don't have the same power. They don't have the same power as men. Let's go to Bobby, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Bobby.
Hey, how you doing, Curtis, Juliet? You know, I think you would agree with me, Curtis. You're a nonviolent person. Well, I got three beautiful daughters, and so a guy tried to touch one of them. So I wound up breaking his hands. I went through the system. The judge let me go. But under these circumstances, I think that you would agree with me. You are the father of children, Curtis, that sometimes you have to take the law into your own hands.
Yeah, and also
when it comes to little girls,
Bobby, I think there's another measure.
Not just little ones, big girls too.
Right, because we often hear of our friends or our associates, business associates, fellow men, who are perving, and we just act like we don't want to know about it. I've always confronted them and say, "Hey, let me tell you something, pal. I can't connect all the dots on you. I don't have all the evidence. But if I hear one more case, you're going to be dealing with me straight up."
It's so hard too on the husbands, the boyfriends, the family members. Like my husband wants to frickin' take some action, and he can't. He's gotta keep himself calm. But I mean, it just doesn't affect the woman too. It affects your family members. It affects your loved ones, your partners. It's a whole nasty mess. And if you've ever dated somebody, been married to somebody who has gone through this, has been a victim, you understand. You know what it's like.
Sure. And there needs to be more exposure of this.
Yeah, men, come on. There are overwhelmingly good men out there.
I know, but
stand up.
This is a problem that exists in a lot of men. Now, whether it's in their DNA, it's the basis of the way they were birthed and raised, genetic, whatever it is, we need to fully study it. And if necessary, these men need to go to diagnostic clinics. They have one in Avenel right there in Woodbridge where they deal with sexual offenders and assaulters and weenie waivers and guys who like to rub up against women. And they try to figure out what's wrong with these guys and correct the behavior. But we, as a society, need to be privy. This can't be private. We need to know.
I completely agree.
Why are these men doing this?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. And then try to corrective behavioral remodification. So that future generations of men are not guilty of this.
And we don't want men being accused of things that they haven't done. We don't
absolutely
want people to, you know, these false accusers are out there, and we don't want that. It not only obviously hurts the man, but it hurts the cause.
1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Juliet Huddy in the house. To the phones we go. It's Carol in Poughkeepsie. Welcome to WABC, Carol.
Hi, Curtis. You're very familiar with the Bronx. I come from the Bronx. I'm an old woman, over 60, and I'm sure you remember the Jerome Park Reservoir.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, in the Bronx. Well, as a child, I must tell you that I cannot name how many times my friends and I had been exposed to by gentlemen or men around the reservoir, and we were very young children. We were about 10 years old. I can tell you that it was a very traumatic experience with long-term effects, and yet we as children were afraid to report them. So what we did is we hid in the basement and cried and waited a few hours until we came out. So I can imagine how these women are feeling, but this is a very old problem.
Yeah, but now, finally,
sadly,
with so many women coming forward, because of the Harvey Weinstein revelations, has been a tsunami, that we can not only expose these pervs.
These exposers.
But then also try to figure out, why is all the furniture upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms? Why do they feel like they have to take out their manhood and expose it to everyone? That's crazy.
Curtis Lewa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours.
I could see you getting out on the dance floor, like, edging up to some hottie back in the day.
I want to know, Juliet Huddy, what she means by her milkshake. Because I know it doesn't have to do with the kind you get at a diner.
To be honest with you, I never really knew what exactly she was talking about.
I do.
Was she talking about like her little shimmying? You know,
no,
like,
yeah. Her milkshake. You don't get that?
I don't. And you, I know I sound very naive, but I don't know where that equates to.
Did you grow up in a convent? You know,
they did call me Fruity Judy. You can ask my friends in high school,
Fruity
Briarcliff
Judy.
High School. Freshman and half of sophomore year, Judy.
I would have accepted that answer from you a few days ago when you were a ditzy blonde, but now all of a sudden that you're a brunette, I will not accept
like
that.
This.
That's right, exactly.
Yes.
As if you're more knowledgeable, more hip, more happening.
Yeah. No, I don't know what, I never got what that meant.
But anyway.
What does it mean?
Well, I have to choose the right words.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
Yeah.
And they're
you can't figure it out from there?
I mean, milkshake. I mean, what, her boobs?
Well, it's the total package.
Her, like her body.
From below the navel to her breast.
Well, what?
To her neck, to her thighs.
How is that milkshake, though? That's my only question. I mean, I get the whole, you know.
Well, it's how you eventually get the milkshake.
But what the hell is a milkshake,
sure you're not a nun?
Lasagna or
but
something.
But anyway, as we're high
atop. Or something like, oh, wait a minute. Crete.
As we're high atop Madison Square. Now you figured it out. As we're high atop Madison Square Garden and these great, nice, and warm and toasty facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. The hawk is talking. Global warming and climate change
we're all gonna die.
Is not existing here on November 10th, that's for sure. But this is a subject matter that you wanted to bring to our attention about a place in which you lived where diners were synonymous to every town, every village, every borough,
every
nook,
five feet.
Every cranny.
Yeah, every
New
five
Jersey.
Feet. New Jersey. It's diner capital of the world. You know, I love diners. I think they're a great way to, you know, kind of go someplace. It's restaurant-y. It's not too fast foody. And, you know, and usually the food is pretty good. So I'm a big patron. And I'm especially a patron of the ones that are owned by, you know, these little families. A lot of times they're Greek families, like the Laurel Diner out in Long Beach, my favorite diner on the planet. But there's this one diner, a very popular place in Wayne Hits with the Wayne Hills Diner. It's on the Hamburg Turnpike. You're probably familiar with that.
No, that's one I'm not.
Well, it's across the street. The Wayne Hills Diner is a popular place. It's across the street, though, from a middle school. And apparently, a lot of the kids will go over there. I don't understand how this is even possible, because how can you leave school when you're in middle school and go across the street to a diner? Doesn't that seem...
Maybe it's a lunch hour. Maybe
yeah, but I thought, don't you have to sit in... I mean, high school, we were allowed to leave campus, but... Middle school? Anyway.
And junior high school, sure.
Okay. Anyway. So these kids will go across the street and they have, you know, like 20, 30 kids at a time. They're all eating. Blah, 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 and then they leave and they don't tip. So what has this diner done? Brilliantly, I think. They have added an 18. Now, 18 might be a little excessive, but an 18% tip to the tabs for the kids. And parents are freaking out. And I say, back off, parents. Back off.
Well, in fact, here's one of those parents freaking out about the gratuity that is built into the kid's bill when, like locusts to a cornfield, they basically take over every booth in your nearby diner.
Code in the Constitution of Alabama are very clear about
well,
his candidacy,
somehow,
and that is
I think somehow that ain't the cut. That's Judge Roy Moore there. Let's see if we can get that
probably
cut
goes to diners
of an enraged parent there who feels
hits
like
young women.
This is a violation of their children, and obviously on the money that the parents have to end up shilling for, because obviously most of these kids don't have their own money unless they're living in a blind trust.
I've been going there my entire life. It's just I feel that they're being targeted because they're kids and they don't know any better. My daughter looked down at her bill and realized that there is a charge for a tip, an 18% charge per child. And then on the bottom it says something about please, you know, leave a gratuity, and they've already charged them a gratuity. Even adults don't always tip. It's not anything against the servers, but you can't assume that these kids don't know what they're doing.
Oh, come on, lady. Anyway, let's open up the phone lines. Is this fair and square what the diner has done? Because obviously it's interfered with a lot of their normal business traffic, the kids taking over the booths.
I'm going to say something.
Taking a milkshake, nursing it for like an hour, taking up the space, getting loud, getting abrasive too.
Yeah, being sloppy. I'm going to say something, and I know I am going to PO a lot of parents out there, and you're going to say, well, she doesn't have a daughter. She has no kids, so why is she? But the fact is, if you don't teach your children, if you as a parent don't teach your children that if you're mature enough to go out by yourselves and to go into a restaurant by yourselves, you should be mature enough to know how the restaurant industry works and how the patrons are supposed to be giving tips.
Sure.
So you should know this if you're without your parents.
Well, let's open up our phone lines, 1-800-848-WABC.
Bad parenting, in my opinion.
I had an experience recently in New Jersey. Was in the hot, sweltering August sun. I remember I was out in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Beautiful area, New Jersey.
In Bergen County. And I was queued up online for Mark Levin's book signing at Bookends, his book Rediscovering Americanism, and it was hot. I had my son, Anthony, my oldest son. I had Nancy Regula, my girlfriend, and I think one other guardian angel there.
Did you have, of course you had your outfit on. He didn't just say, hey, Curtis, come up to the front of the line?
No. I was there to meet and greet people. Because they had to stand online for a long time.
Damn.
So I wanted to keep them engaged.
Right.
And then afterwards, I said, okay, let's go over to the Country Pancake House, which is on Ridgewood Avenue, South Walnut, world famous. They have like 10,000 pancake varieties.
Place was
packed. Remember, this is Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And in the back booth next to us were these Indian kids, East Asian kids. I engage them in conversation. Oh, yeah, their parents were from Madras. They're doctors. They're physicists. And they were sitting there nursing milkshakes for like an hour. Now, they weren't disruptive. Because you know what Indian kids do. They study on Saturdays.
God, I so love they're you all and doing the homework.
But the waitress got stiffed by them.
Ugh.
You know, they paid just. And you could see it was a poor. Because she couldn't move a lot of traffic. So I said, don't worry about it. And whereas I gave a $20 tip for what we were having, I think the bill came to about $60. I gave her an extra $20. And I said, this is for those kids there. Because I said, you got to understand, they don't know. I don't think their parents have taught them.
And that's the problem there. It's not the kids' fault. Parents,
they weren't disruptive. You know, they were doing their homework, something we like to see. I mean, I never did homework on a Saturday. Kids getting together. And, although it's not a diner, you know, Country Pancake House. It's sort of like a diner. And so she felt relieved. But let's face it. That's a lot of money if you're sitting in a booth for an hour.
Why are these parents getting mad? These people are working, hardworking, blue-collar men and women who are trying to get by, and they're trying to take care of their families, their children. What do you have a problem with? The fact that these people are finally getting paid, getting their due, and, you know, in my opinion, we should probably be raising the wages.
And then you tell the kids,
anyway,
you tell the kids if it's bad service, you know, maybe don't tip. If it's good service, you give them a little. You nourish the tip. Anyway, let's go to Paul in Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Paul.
Hey, Paul. Curtis, Juliet, nice to meet you guys.
Hey.
I do disagree with the tipping. It seems like lately the restaurants are getting out of control. Are we paying the salaries of the employees of the restaurant, or are we paying for the product that we're receiving?
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand that argument, definitely. But the fact is that we're talking about a bunch of kids going in there. Unless they change things, we have to deal with this matter that we're dealing with right now. So, I mean, do you agree that the children should be paying tips just like everybody else?
I do it should be optional, especially the kids. You know what I'm saying? But not 20%, not 18% on a $7 burger. You know what I mean? For 10 kids sitting there.
I just think it's just going to get so messy, because then if you say, okay, I'm going to put an 18% tip on the chat, and you tell your child, well, you know what, if you don't feel that you got good service, then you need to, you know, you demand that you get your money back. Then it's going to turn into a whole you know what show with the kids arguing with the owners of the restaurant, and the parents are going to come, and it's going to be like Little League baseball.
Anyway, let's go to Jeff calling from Wayne, New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, listen, I totally agree that they should be charged a gratuity, especially even in a group of 10 or more. They should be charged. And you know what? The people provide a service, especially the waiters and waitresses. They work. They rely
hard.
On the tips.
They work hard, too. You know? Those waitresses and waiters over at the Laurel Diner they're on their feet. They're fast. I mean, they've got a million tables that they're dealing with. These are hardworking people. Shouldn't get stiffed.
You touched it really good when you said you should teach your kids, you know, certain values in life.
Well, it's easy for me to say because I don't have kids, but I mean, it's true.
I mean, I would tell my kid to tip somebody. Even I tip the mailman. I tip the UPS guy. Even sometimes I tip the guy that pumps my gas when it's 20 degrees.
So do I. Absolutely. Yeah.
You mean,
you know, you give him a dollar.
Jeff. So when Habib is coming up and pumping your gas, because you're not permitted to do that in New Jersey, with the schmata on his head, you throw him a little bit of coin when it's cold out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So do I. You don't do that? Thanks for the call.
No, not unless they give you full service. I used to be a gas jockey. I used to pump gas.
What
at
did
a Shell
you
station.
Do?
And I would check your tires.
Oh, yeah.
I would check the oil. I would even check the transmission oil that almost nobody else could find, particularly the people who drove the cars. They had no idea where their transmission oil
was. I remember those days when they would open your hood, they would do the little dipstick thing in there. Oh, yeah.
Right. You wanted to tip me for that? Fine. But I felt as a full-service gas station, that's what you have to do. These gas jockeys in Jersey, they don't
do that. Oh, let me tell you something. I went to the BP down in Hoboken, right there on the corner of Willow. And I asked for because I'm a dummy. I don't know how to do the air in the tires. This guy, he refused to come out of his little hut there in the middle. He
little
refused.
Kiosk,
I was like,
hey,
you can't really? And then, of course, I had my little road rage put in the driveway.
Right. It's supposed to be a full service
scream that
now,
I would never come
a lot
back.
Of people, they don't want it because they know you'll mess things up. You know, you'll take the dipstick from the motor oil and then mix it up with the dipstick of the transmission.
But this
oil.
Is a local place. I mean, this is, it's the place that everybody goes.
Yeah,
right,
and they charge
the mobile,
like, what, $5 a gallon in Hoboken there?
Yeah, but, if you do a good job, if you're helpful, I want to tip you. I want to support my community.
Well, let's go to Michael calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Mike.
Okay, first of all, this nonsense that the kids sit there for 3 hours doing homework, that you can put an end to. You put up a sign, you've got 45 minutes to eat and finished. Because I've seen that in a number of restaurants, especially buffet places, where the people will sit there, wait till they digest the food, and then eat some more.
Yeah.
Sign, you're limited to 40 minutes, and that's it. So that takes care of the time. Now, as far as tipping is supposed to be optional. You are not obligated to tip. They have no business telling you that you must tip. That's at the discretion of the person who is being waited on.
Now,
and then to put up a thing that says, we're going to charge kids 18%, you talk about discrimination, that is definitely discrimination. And maybe if the cheapskates who own the restaurant pay their waitresses and waiters more money, they wouldn't have to depend on getting money from the people that come in there to eat. Tell the restaurant owners to stop being so goddamn cheap and stingy and pay them a decent wage.
Now, you know what's interesting? You mentioned the buffet places. You know why they put up the signs that you only get to cop a squat for 30 minutes or
45
minutes.
Yeah, because they don't want you going back for 3 hours and constantly getting...
No, because who owns most of the buffet joints?
Oh, here we go. Who?
Chinese. And they come out. Mr. Chop Chop comes out, right? As he's chopping the lettuce in the back, or what, the bok chow. He'll say, you don't get out of here, it's Chop Chop. And then all of a sudden, boom, feet don't fail me now.
Yeah, remember, guy used to go to Golden Corral in college? Oh, my, that was like... I gained so much weight because I would just go back.
The Chinese have mastered running buffet operations where they give you a lot of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
But don't try to take lobster legs, right? Oh, forget it. That'll start a war. No! No lobster leg!
Oh, God,
no lobster leg!
Doing the impression
for buffet!
I love it.
1-800. 848-WABC. Let's go right to the phones, and it's Cliff who's calling from Rockaway. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Cliff.
Hi, Cliff.
Hi, Juliet. Hi, Curtis. Curtis, you're just an inspiration to us all. And I was just watching the trailer. Blew me away. I definitely got to check out this vigilante thing, because I think I was looking at your face, your eyes, over the years. You know, you're showing yourself, your face over the years. The intensity has not dimmed at all, my friend. That's what I can say about that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Cliff.
And here's the deal. I figured middle school kids, they come in at a certain hour, get some old-timers that use the restaurant for midday meals, stuff like that. They're probably disruptive. They're probably loud. And they probably take up a lot of room and really don't order anything significant, even if they tipped. Now, what happened to me was me and my wife are at this place called Cafe Espanol downtown here.
I know exactly where that is.
Okay, well, there's a line outside, bunch of jokers from the college. Me and my wife go in. I'm paying over $200 for my meal. The food's great. And right next to me, these two, a fella and a girl sit down next to me, and they order two cups of coffee and a cake. And then they split the cake, so they have to send the waiter back for an extra fork. And they send it back for extra napkins, and they giggle to themselves. And they thought it was such a laugh that they were going to pay 20% on two cups of coffee and a slice of cake. Either, if it's offensive to have the kids going home saying you have to tip, just put a cover on the front of it, and that'll be the end of it. I'll bet you the kids are just disruptive, they're loud, and they're not ordering anything of any significance. They just want to get out of that environment for an hour, and then, they go back in. That's my guess.
Yeah, probably.
I would bet that's the case. Let's go to Diane, who's calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Diane?
Good afternoon. How are you? It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Hi.
I'm calling because I've been in the server industry for many, many years. And a lot of people don't realize that the people in the industry, we don't make minimum wage, mm-hmm. but we still pay taxes and things come out of our paycheck. So, we pay taxes, we pay health insurance. So 99% of us don't even get a paycheck, because whatever we're making from the wage that we're getting, which isn't minimum
yep.
wage, is going towards all that stuff. So we rely on those tips. That is our livelihood. That's how we live.
So you agree with this diner out in New Jersey. You agree with...
I absolutely do.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm with you.
I mean, kids come in the restaurant and we're like, oh boy, I got a bunch of kids. And you know what? Sometimes they fool you and they leave you a great tip, or they'll leave you something. But most of the time, they don't know any better. Well, and it's not their fault, like you said. It's the parents.
Yeah, my parents, I'm hopeless when it comes to adding and subtracting, but my parents instilled it in me. Give a 20% tip. I mean, I was a kid. We would go to Armand's Pizza in D.C., and my friends would drive in after high school. The school day was over. And I made sure we always gave the 20% tip, even though I had a problem figuring out what 20% was.
I mentioned how after we were at the book signing that Mark Levin had this August, Rediscovering Americanism, his book at Bookends in Ridgewood,
yes,
New
in
Jersey.
Ridgewood, yes, beautiful bucolic.
And how we stopped at the Country Pancake House afterwards, and I described the Indian kids, who were studying there but milking, sort of nursing milkshakes for over an hour and not leaving a tip for the waitress.
Uh-huh.
She reminded me the reason I left the additional tip on their behalf, an extra $20, is because I had inadvertently gone into the ladies' room for 10 minutes because, the colitis.
Oh, no.
And everyone was petrified to tell me I couldn't go in, and nobody would come in to get me out of there. So there was a queue of women outside.
Oh, my God.
Who were horrified.
Oh, my gosh. So that's why? So it wasn't...
I greased her a little bit more, because they were all afraid of, Ridgewood, little bucolic Ridgewood, next to Oradell,
What happened with the your so-called Indian kids?
Oh, they had already left.
Oh!
They did their homework.
So this was one big fraud.
They stiffed the waitress. They stiffed the waitress. Their parents were from Madras. Apparently, their parents had not taught them that in America, you come,
okay,
you got a tip.
Do we have to, like...
Okay, surprised they didn't call in a hazmat team for you.
Can you imagine?
Oh,
they were afraid. Why would they have been afraid of me? To tell me, no, you can't
where do we
walk
begin?
Into the woman's room, and you got to get out of here.
I don't know. You in a woman's
not
room.
Not even the Greek guy who owned the place.
In and of itself.
The country pancake. Not even the Greek guy would come in, Zorba the Greek, and tell me you got to go. But anyway, on that note, let's get some news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
This week, 77 WABC and Curtis Sliwa salutes our veterans, Navy SEAL and best-selling author Rob O'Neill.
And then we get called, Captain Richard Phillips has just been taken by Somali pirates. Your team's going to get him now. Less than 16 hours after we got the message, we're in the Indian Ocean. And a day and a half later, we rescued Captain Richard Phillips with some shots from our snipers. We were just there to rescue the hostage. But as always, the perfect plan, we came up with five great plans. The perfect plan never exists. It's always life is what happens around you as you're planning.
Veterans Day, we salute the veterans of yesterday and today. 77 WABC.
And I said, no, 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 I don't smoke it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor.
Hey, hey, hey.
No, thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze.
And then it makes it hard to find the door. Oh, my God, this is like a throwback. When did this song come out?
What is this, Ringo Starr?
No, wait, what is it? Is it?
It's like, what, in the 70s?
Wait, why do I remember a different version of it, though?
I don't know. Maybe you were in a drug-induced psychosis.
I was in the 70s?
You hadn't put it down on the floor, and you were still into your mode of puff, pass.
I was not even five. Well, I mean, yeah, I wasn't even born.
That's what you say.
Well, exactly. Yeah, sticking to it.
But now, this Ringo Starr classic.
No, no,
he didn't have
no.
many classics, unless he was with the Beatles, but on his own.
Back off.
You wanted to intro a subject that you said I am hopelessly guilty of.
Okay, so I've known Curtis now. It's been about 5 years. And as I've said many, many times, Curtis is the man, the hardest working man, not just in showbiz, but the hardest working man, period. He is riddled with issues. I mean, not just mental issues, but physical issues as well, as we've all heard. But yet, he gets done with this show. He goes and preps for his next show at 5 o'clock. Then when he's done with that, he either goes to a Guardian Angels event. He goes to another event. He goes to a book signing, not to do a book signing himself, but to be in the line to kind of work the crowd for somebody else's book signing. I mean, it's endless. And then the weekend comes up and he's flying off to this place and that place. And then Sunday comes around. He's got something else going on in the evening. So my thing was to him the other day, I texted him last week and I said, dude, you've got to start saying no to this stuff. You have to go and take a vacation, please. I mean, this is not my position. This is Nancy Regula's position. This is your girlfriend. But for both of you, you need to take a vacation. You need rest. You need to, I know what you say. I know you're looking at me, you're glaring at me right now. I can rest when I'm dead. But you need to take a vacation. Look, you have to start saying no for my mental health.
Look,
my happiness.
I'll explain it to you because obviously there are a lot of people out there and there are studies that suggest they have to start saying no to people when things are being requested of them. So it's not just unique to me. But I'll explain my circumstance. This morning, my girlfriend Nancy Regula said to me, do you know how stacked up you are with appointments on Sunday? I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, you are the Grand Marshal of the Prostate Cancer Run out in Long Island in the early morning, which I'm committed to because obviously I want people not to have to go through the horrors of prostate cancer if they don't get treatment or if they don't get a diagnosis. And then I'm scheduled to be at the Throgs Neck in the Bronx Veterans Day Parade at 12 noon. And then naturally we have the world premiere in New York City of the Guardian Angel documentary about my life called Vigilante.
At 9:15 at night.
Right, at 9:15
so
at night.
So when do you go home to your lazy boy, kick back, take your shoes off, walk, you know, be socked, you know, preferably with a bathrobe, and start, you know, eating your turkey and just watching TV and chilling out.
Look, I don't wear bathrobes. That's
okay. Well, whatever. You know what I mean.
That's like Hugh Hefner, right? I think of Hugh Hefner every time I see a bathrobe.
Your little red outfit with your little red sweatpant outfit with your little beret.
No,
like, when do you take a break?
I'll explain to you. And in fact, it didn't make the cut out of the lot of footage taken for this Guardian Angel Curtis Sliwa documentary called Vigilante. By the way, Cliff had mentioned it, our previous caller in the last segment. You can go to WABCradio.com. That's WABCradio.com. Look at the tab for the documentary Vigilante. It'll tell you where you can see it in New York City. There are only two showings as it premieres here, Sunday night and then Wednesday afternoon. I'm going to be at both. I'm going to do the intros, and then I'm going to do the Q&As afterwards. So I hope to meet you and greet you there. Go to WABCradio.com.
I'll see you on Wednesday.
Watch the trailer. But there was a part there when I was talking to the producer, director, writer, David Wexler, and his editor, Brad Coleman, in which I said, I never say no, because I remember in the beginning of the Guardian Angels, it was 1979, the first year, and we were a pariah. We were sort of on the
scourge of the earth,
on the outside looking in, and nobody wanted us. And I remember this enlightened teacher from Erasmus High School in Brooklyn, in Flatbush. That's the one that the schnoz, Barbara Streisand, had gone to. Had invited me to come to speak to his history class, his civics class. I had never been invited because we were basically, we had the scarlet letter of the vigilantes.
How old were you at this time?
25, 26.
Okay.
So I show up at Erasmus, and the teacher is summoned to come down by the dean, actually, at the time. They didn't have security officers. It was a dean.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing he saw me was being handcuffed.
What?
By the dean. And arrested because the principal had said that I was trespassing, that I could not be on the grounds of Erasmus High School, and I was taken to the nearby precinct and processed for arrest. One of many arrests that I've been arrested for. The teacher was horrified. And I didn't want him to jeopardize his position because I realized, hey, he's not 10. You know, he hasn't done his 3 to 5 years. He could be sacked. Mm-hmm. So I said nothing. You know why I was there. Even though everybody knew why I was there because the teacher had invited me. But I wasn't going to throw gasoline on the fire and kill this kid's career.
Gotcha.
But I appreciated every opportunity, any invitation I got, because I wasn't getting wolf tickets back then.
Yeah, but that was 50 years ago, Curtis. At what point, I mean, no offense, and I don't mean to be cruel by saying this, but you're physically, you've really, you know, you're suffering right now. I mean, I've seen you when you come in here and you know, there are some rough days. You need to rest. You need to be able to say no, not, I mean, literally not just for your physical health, but your mental health and the people that love you.
I'll tell you why I can't say no, and I'll scrape myself off the ground and schlep to wherever it is I've been invited.
You guys have no idea how bad it gets sometimes with him. I'm serious. Yeah.
No, I'm on the ground. I'm in a fetal position.
It's ridiculous.
I've actually been in the studio in a fetal position doing the broadcast, and people don't know that. Because as long as I can talk and squawk.
But don't you see that it's moronic to be that way. Because you're going to send yourself into the grave.
Juliet,
that's what you're going
to
do.
There'll be plenty of time to rest and sleep when you are in the grave.
Do you want to start sleeping earlier than you should?
No, I figured it out. Because of my fiscal problems, I'll probably be buried in a cardboard box. I don't want to be cremated.
That's never going to happen, by the way.
I'll be in the graveside of my parents there.
Oh, so, okay, you want to be buried. I want to be cremated.
But it'll be a cardboard box because at this rate, I can't afford a casket.
Well, go fund me. Don't worry.
But the point being is, when you die, and I've been in enough wakes and funerals as people have been who are listening to us, they give you a half suit, they give you half shoes, they fold your hands, everybody comes by and says, oh, he looks better in death than he did in life. What a great job, you know, the mortician did here. And then they close the casket, and that's it. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. You sleep for the rest of whatever it is that you're here on this plane for.
I understand that. You want to take advantage of every moment you possibly can. But every moment also can be a moment that you savor, you use to meditate and think. And recharge your batteries. You're eating healthy right now because you don't want to die.
If I get a chance to sit down and think, it's just going to make me mad. And you don't want me to be angrier than I already am.
This is like torment. I thought we were going to be talking about, you know, why I double booked, double booked tonight. And I'm freaking out about it. Now we're talking about life and death. It's just gotten so heavy.
Do you tell people no when they ask you?
I used to not tell people no for the most part. I'm talking about socially. Like I would be double booking, triple booking. Then I'd feel guilty because I'd have to bail out of somebody. I've just gotten to the point where I cannot deal with, I have to have my rest. I need a night on the weekend. And I can't even believe I'm saying that because I was the queen of the social butterfly.
You were the party girl.
Well, at a time I was. Yes, I was. I'm not anymore. I mean, I do like to have my fun, but I definitely need my rest now. I've matured. It only took
matured.
Me. It only took me 30 years.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Billy calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Billy.
L.A.
Hello, guys. Glad to hear you today. You know, one of the most difficult things, and Curtis, this has got to be super difficult for you, is to try and disconnect, try and rest your mind, and stop thinking. And it's all almost impossible to do these days.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do, in my suggestion, is to disconnect and listen to some music.
Romeo.
Go meet Curtis and Juliet.
Uh-huh.
Something and Delilah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Vibrato.
You can try and put them down.
Romeo and Juliet. Oh, yes. Oh, my God. And you have, listen, Bill, have you heard the Killers version of Romeo and Juliet, the Mark Knopfler Romeo and Juliet?
No,
even better.
Sorry.
Even better.
I got to tell you. That song,
phone up on that one and then call us back.
That song didn't do it for me. There's only one form of music in which I can actually zone out and become a whirling dervish.
Stereo Mud's Pain.
No, that's Stereo Mud's Pain. Pain will get me.
I thought you wanted that.
It gets me angry. No, I'm talking about something that completely zones me out, and I become like a whirling dervish.
Can I get, electronic dance.
Oh, electronic dance music. I can listen to that for hours. People will pass by the office here at night when I'm working away, and I am just like pounding the beats through the woofers and the tweeters, and I will play sometimes the same song over and over and over as I raise the roof.
Have you heard of Dua Lipa? The singer Dua Lipa? Oh, I don't know if we can get this.
I don't need liposuction.
No. Dua Lipa. It's a British singer. Hold on.
Hold on.
Be the One. Be the One.
Well, we'll see. We'll try to come back with that.
I'm sorry.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Well, what song is this?
You'll hear in a minute.
Does nothing for me.
Okay.
What is it?
It's Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa. It reminds me of liposuction.
Okay. I didn't pick her name.
That song sucks. I'm sorry.
Okay. Can you start it off from the beginning? Just.
It's horrible.
No, it's not.
There's no way you can recover from a bad beginning.
That is just cruel.
Because then goodbye. Click, I turn it off.
I got to go meet my friends.
I go to another radio station.
I have to go meet my girlfriends.
Although if you listen to talk, you stay right here, WABC, 24/7, 365. But anyway, Juliet Huddy.
Great weekend, Curtis. I'm sure you're going to be relaxing and
The debut in New York City of the Guardian Angel documentary about my life, Vigilante.
If you make it till then.
Oh, I will.